Hello, this is Chris Yerkes reading to you from the June 7th edition of the Journal. We'll start with the first page stories. Dumpster divers delight at TCHS. School dumps old furnishings to make way for new. By Dominic Stallings. Tuscola High School's construction work has been in full swing since May 30th. As part of an original $11 million construction contract and an additional $5.5 million contract, Omni Energy is renovating the ag classroom, cafeteria, and stage, and several other infrastructure projects, such as air conditioning installation throughout the school. According to an email from Superintendent Gary Alexander, the current ag classroom and shop will move to the space that was ag 3 years ago. The cafeteria will move to where the current ag classroom and shop is, and will have a mixture of old and new equipment. Tuscola residents have noted that the school was seemingly throwing away large amounts of wood materials from the former industrial arts program, as well as chairs and tables and other equipment. Board Secretary Darrell Spillman said he wanted to clarify some of the things happening at the construction site. Spillman said he isn't part of the superintendent committee for the construction, but he does have some knowledge about the project. Spillman said, "I know that our current ag teacher, Sarah Schoon, has gone through and picked out the equipment she wants to keep." Spillman said the school also bought in an outside consultant, an industrial arts teacher from another school. Spillman said he didn't know the teacher's name. The consultant looked through the remaining equipment and pointed out what equipment is still good for use and what should be thrown out. Alexander wrote that industrial arts equipment is being moved to the ag shop for the ag classroom. Industrial arts equipment that is not used in the ag class will be stored in the former industrial arts room at East Prairie. Spillman said the school district is hoping to start up an industrial arts program again, but it is difficult to find teachers to teach it. Some wood materials left over from the industrial arts program have also thrown into the dumpster. Spillman said that the wood materials were looked over and the school decided to keep the best pieces. Wood that was warped or damaged in any way was sent to the dumpster, he said. Some residents have indicated an interest in keeping some of the discarded materials. Spillman said that he and others have helped themselves to the wood in the dumpster. He said he didn't like seeing the materials go unused in the dumpster and eventually the landfill. He explained that the school can't tell people to come pick up materials since it would create liability issues. Illinois does not have any laws prohibiting dumpster diving as long as the dumpster or trash receptacle is on public property. Currently, a large number of chairs and desks can be seen in the dumpster by the high school. Spillman said he was surprised how many desks and chairs were being thrown out. He hopes the school had reached out to other schools to see if they wanted to use some of the desks or tables, but he is unsure of whether they did. Spillman said the school district is purchasing new furniture through the contractors working on the school, but it is not part of the building renovation contract. Spillman works as project manager at the Beckman Institute for Advanced Science and Technology at the University of Illinois and compared the Tuscola situation to a similar one on the U of I campus. Spillman said the university was throwing out lab equipment and can't give it to anybody because government entities, since the equipment was purchased with state funds. Tuscola School District operates on those same standards as the university. The discarded equipment, materials, chairs, and desks in Tuscola could have been auctioned off, but according to Spillman, the district would have to go up to Springfield through a state agency. The profits received through the auction might not offset the transportation costs enough, said Spillman. I know the public is concerned. As am I, a taxpayer. I understand that too, said Spillman. Bob Devlin, board president, referred to Alexander for further details about the construction work. Alexander was on vacation last week. The second front page story, Historic Flessers receives $40,000 national grant. Flessers Candy Kitchen received a $40,000 Backing Historic Small Restaurants grant from the National Trust for Historic Preservation through the Financial Services Corporation of American Express. Flessers Candy Kitchen is one of 25 recipients to receive funding from the collective $1 million. This year's restaurants embody the unique stories of how local businesses empower communities, sustain cultural traditions, and extend family legacies, said Catherine Malone France, Chief Preservation Officer, National Trust for Historic Preservation. Devin Flesher, owner of Flesher's Candy Kitchen, said, "It's fantastic because we couldn't afford to do this work ourselves. We have ignored it as long as we could since we don't have any extra money. The $40,000 is going toward the outer facade of the original building. The grant requires the funds to be used to repair the building exterior, somewhere the public can see. We're going to replace rotten wood and displace a few generations of pigeons," said Flesher. She added that the front entrance will be the focus of the work, noting that it's not the most sexy project, but it is still important to do. "It'll look cleaner and not like it's falling apart, and more welcoming," said Flesher. Flesser said she spent around $20,000 to do repairs and resealing the roof, which used up extra funds this year. Flesser was approached by Tim Ovaravik, Community Development Manager for Vista Champaign County, and told her about the grant from the National Trust for Historic Preservation. The hardest part of receiving the grant was getting the application finished in time. Flesser said they didn't have much time left before the deadline. Employee Sarah McCrory helped Flesser with the process. "She's another reason we got the grant. She did the computer work and helped put it together," said Flesser. She also received help from her sister, Ann Flesser Beck, and former co-owner of the restaurant. Ann provided some more details about the historic business. Flesser said the business was also nominated by Mayor Dan Kleiss. Brian Moody, Executive Director for the Tuscola Chamber and Economic Development, and David Butler. "We're historically significant in our town, and when you live in a small town of 4,500 people, it's hard to survive," said Flesser. "The recognition of receiving a national award is also good for the community, as it's great publicity for the town," she said. What is now Flesser's Candy Kitchen was originally the family confectionery. Devin and Ann Flesser worked together with their brother Scott Flesser in business until it shut down in the late 1970s. The three siblings went on to pursue their own careers afterward. Ann convinced Devin to come back to Tuscola to reopen the old family business. They both worked together to renovate the building and opened in 2005 as Flesser's Candy Kitchen. Ann Flesser's book, Sweet Greeks, details the history of the original confectionery and the entrepreneurial perspective of the family of Greek immigrants in the 20th century. Ann Flesser retired in 2022, and Devin took over the business with her husband, Robert Story. The next story, Jarman Plaza opens a new gym in Tuscola, offers personal training, fitness classes, and yogurt, by Dominic Stallings. Relentless Gym, a new fitness facility in Tuscola, opened its doors with a ribbon-cutting ceremony on June 3rd. Visitors were able to see the facilities and enjoy free sandwiches provided by Tuscola's Kirby Foods. Building owner Chris Robinson gave tours of the Jarman Plaza with his ongoing revitalization project happening all across the old hospital. Relentless Gym is open 24/7 for members and offers the usual gym equipment that you might find elsewhere. The space is easy to find. You can find treadmills and other training equipment immediately on your right side when you walk into the building. Stuart Wolf, Cam Fry, and Sierra Fry provide personalized training with NOW, Nothing Over Will. They also offer small group classes Monday through Thursday with high-intensity training. Missy Shunk also offers personal training through the Misfit Personal Training. Each provides a personalized workout experience through different packages to fit different individual needs. For more information on personal training, you can visit their Facebook pages. If working on your own or with a personal trainer doesn't quite fit you, you can join a fitness class with Amber Seep, who hosts strength and conditioning classes Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays from 4:45 to 6:30 a.m. and Tuesdays and Thursdays from 5:30 to 6:30 a.m. and 4:45 to 6 p.m. For more information, you can call or text her at 217-621-3988. The Jarman Plaza now also offers yoga through Andrea Boley and Emma Rhodes. Boley said they're the first certified trainers who practice and teach yoga in Tuscola. Other fitness programs have incorporated yoga-like practices but don't incorporate the more mental aspects of the practice. "Tuscola is a nice community and we found a lot of people who want to do yoga but don't know where to start," said Boley. Boley said she and Rhodes started teaching yoga after receiving certification last year in April. Boley said she wants to include everyone in yoga practice. She makes sure her classes are adaptable for people with mobility difficulties. She teaches at the Stevens YMCA in Champaign. Her instruction at YMCA includes a Parkinson's exercise class and aqua fitness. "Even if you can't get up and down from the floor easily, you can still do the class," said Boley. The yoga class includes the mental aspects of yoga as well, including mindfulness, meditation, and spirituality. "The whole point is the mind and body connection. The goal is peace of mind," said Boley. For more information on yoga classes, you can visit lifethroughyoga.com. Robin said that the Jarman Plaza will include a sauna, which is included with the Relentless Gym membership. "However, the sauna won't be open for another 2 weeks," said Robinson. "They're still finishing up the men's side of the sauna." Robinson has also converted other floors of the Jarman Plaza into apartments, with one- and two-bedroom apartments on the third floor and studios on the second floor. He has people waiting to rent from him, but the spaces aren't quite available as he's still waiting on materials for the electrical installation. The parts were supposed to have come in April, but the shipping date was pushed back to late June. And the last first-page story, Stone, Using Music to Help Himself and Others, by Tony Hooker. The actual number varies a bit, but that's not really the issue. The fact is that for more than 15 veterans take their own life every day, and that's too many. There was a time when country musician David Allen Stone would have been one of them. I recently talked to him about just that and about how he was able to fight back his demons after returning home from Afghanistan, his career, and much more. Stone, who serves as First Sergeant in the Illinois National Guard, returned home to Hudsonville 6 years ago after deploying to Afghanistan with his unit, and soon many of the issues that plague returning soldiers started to haunt him. In a way, those struggles are what have brought him to this point in his career. "I was struggling with depression and alcoholism, and I started writing a song," Stone exclaimed. "I didn't really finish it until a few years later. Then a good friend of mine named Tyler Zellers took his own life. The song, called Bury These Burdens, is about suicide awareness and prevention among soldiers, and the loss of his friend compelled him to finish it." For Stone, music is what saved him from a fate like that of his buddy. "Music literally saved my life," he said, "because I can put all my emotions that I'm feeling into my guitar." Not content to simply write the song, Stone soon found himself in Nashville, Tennessee, where he recorded it and also made a video. "It's available on all streaming platforms," said the artist, who is quick to point out that he's a country singer, but will cover the occasional rock and roll song. Stone has been involved with TV. There's a television broadcast called The Country Network, and they have a TV show called The Next Big Twang, and it's a competition. "I sent out a music video for Bury These Burdens, and I got selected to be on the show. It started out with almost 1,000 artists, and then it got down to 34. Those 34 got put on the Country Network's YouTube channel, and then the top 10 got put on the show. I was one of the top 10, and I got a second place. The top 10 was determined by whoever got the most views and likes on the YouTube channel, and I got second place. They ran that for about a month, and then the Country Network staff actually determined who the winner was, and they selected me. So I won that, and my video is now on constant rotation on the Country Network. So what's next for Next Big Twang? First, he's set to retire from the National Guard in about a month after serving for 20 years, and for now, he'll continue to work his full-time job in his hometown and continue making and recording music. The dream, of course, is to make it so big that he and his wife can move to Nashville and make music full-time, but for now, that's just a dream. One that he's been thinking of for a long time. "I've always wanted to perform on the Grand Ole Opry stage. That's always been a dream of mine ever since I was little. That's where all the greats have performed, and that's where I want to be," he exclaimed. The National Suicide Prevention Lifeline's number is 1-800-273-8255. Crisis text line can be reached by texting HOME to 741-741. Now we'll move to the obituaries. Jerry Hines of Carmel, Indiana, formerly of Tuscola, passed away peacefully in his home on Sunday, May 28, 2023. He was 94 years old. Funeral services will be held at 11 a.m. Friday, June 9th, at the Villa Grove First Christian Church, 701 North Sycamore Street, Villa Grove, with the Reverend Mike Zylstra officiating. Burial will be in the Tuscola Township Cemetery with military graveside rites accorded. Visitation will be held 1 hour prior to the services at the church. Jeanette Jan Warner, 89, of LeGrand, Oregon, formerly of Bement, passed away on Sunday, May 21st, 2023, in LeGrand, Oregon. A memorial service was held Saturday, June 3rd, at the First Presbyterian Church in LeGrand. Mary Frances Bergener Best, 89, of Spring Hill, Florida, passed away on March 17, 2023. A graveside service is planned for 11 a.m. Saturday, June 10th at the Mackville Cemetery at Wood with Father Angel Sierra officiating. There's an article, Tuscola Public Library Starts Summer Read, Find Your Voice, by Dominic Stallings. Tuscolans of all ages are able to participate in the Tuscola Public Library Summer Read event. This year's theme is Find Your Voice. Tuscola Library Director Devin Black said the five-week reading program is mostly geared toward kids and teens, but adults are also encouraged to participate. Participants can read any book they want at home as long as they write it into their logs. Naturally, the library has a wide variety of books for people to check out. Those interested can sign up at the Tuscola Public Library. Kids who sign up receive a squishy plush animal. If they meet their reading goal, 30 minutes a day, 5 days a week, they can receive a prize each week. Children can also have books read to them as well. The prizes include stickers, hand clapper toys, megaphones, and Find Your Voice inspired toys. "Parents love us," said Black. Teens have to read within their reading level for 45 minutes a day for 5 days a week. They don't get weekly prizes like the children, but if they complete all 5 weeks, they receive a $10 Amazon gift card. Adults have a task list of different things they can do, such as volunteer an hour at the local nonprofit, visit another library, or visit one of the Tuscola Library events like the outdoor movie, poetry discussion, or karaoke events. Adults who finish the 5-week receive a library perks card, which features coupons that can pay library fines. The summer reading culminates in the grand prize raffle on July 12th on Water Fun Day. Logs and task lists that are fully completed and returned by the end of library hours on July 8th will be entered to win prizes. Children can receive a family pool pass for 2023 thanks to the City of Tuscola. Teens can receive a savings account and gift bag from Tuscola First Bank, which is valued at $100. Adults can win a local gift card pack with $25 gift cards to each of Mi Veracruz, Amazon, Kirby Foods, and Joe's Pizza. Black said the program is flexible. You can sign up pretty late and you can make up missed weeks. Kids and teens can also do more reading on some days to skip others. Kids who finish the required amount of reading can still receive weekly prizes even if they finish later. The only deadline is the July 8th drawing. There's also an extra catch-up week for those who started late. The summer read isn't just for fun prizes. Black said there are a lot of benefits for child's education. Libraries have noticed that test scores for reading drop when they enter school in the fall. He said libraries call it the summer slide. It stemmed from students not exercising their brains by reading during the summer months. Black said that simply reading during the summer will stop the drop-off. He also thinks it can help kids stay ahead of the curve when it comes to schoolwork. Black said the summer reading program is also good to have since there are currently more kids hanging out and playing at the library. It is one of the few public places with air conditioning, with the pool currently not open, a great place for kids to enjoy the summer. Black said the library has a lot more events during the summer than they do throughout the year. He hopes to see more kids utilize the events and try different things. We want for them the library to be a place to read, watch, or have something to do, said Black. Pool delay. City pool delay affects Tuscola Torpedoes swim team practice, by Margie Turner. The Tuscola Torpedoes summer swim season had a start date of May 30th. However, the Tuscola City pool's pump troubles not only affected public pool goers, but also the recreational swim team that counts on the 30-meter, 8-lane pool for practice and meets. The Torpedoes Administration Board jumped into action when rumors started circulating of mechanical delays. The city's communication with the team helped the board and coaches with rumor control within the team and in making decisions ahead of their first meet. On May 31st, the city updated the team and public with an ETA of 2 to 3 weeks before the pool be fully operational. Reaching out to other conference teams, the Torpedoes found support from Indian Acres Swimming Club, Sholem Aquatic Center, and the Stevens YMCA, all offering lanes and pool rentals. The admin board made the difficult decision to offer refunds to swimmers who could not make the travel schedule work. They also canceled the trial period program, which allows swimmers to participate in practices for 1 week before committing to the team. Due to the added cost of renting lanes to hold practices in the limited space, we cannot support trial period swimmers. The Torpedoes are one of the smaller swim teams in their conference. 58 swimmers registered for the team during open registration this spring. Of the 46 remaining swimmers, 36 make up the main competitive team, and 10 are in the pre-team group, designed to operate like a semi-private swim lesson to develop 4 to 6-year-old athletes. The board had particularly difficult time securing a location for the pre-team due to the size and nature of the practices. Private pool owners do not want to take on the liability, and the local hotels no longer allow pool time to non-guests. The impact of the city pool delay is being felt strongest on this group. Their season has been cut in half, 4 weeks instead of 8. Refunds are being issued for half the original registration fee. The main team practice at Sholem on Thursday and Friday, having rented an hour before opening hours. The team has rented a lane at the Stevens YMCA in Champaign starting next week for 2.5-hour slots and will travel to Effingham for their first meet on June 10th. In the next section, Drug Overdose Prevention Program sites now available throughout the county, by Dominic Stallings. Several organizations across Douglas County have partnered with Recovery Oriented Systems of Care, ROSC, to provide drug overdose prevention programs, DOPP sites. So far, 6 cities in Douglas County are participating in the program: Arthur Public Library District, Newman Regional Library District, Atwood Hammond Public Library, Tuscola United Methodist Church, Camargo Township District Library, and Rural Grace Food Pantry in Murdoch. Narcan and Narcan training is also available through the Douglas County Health Department under a separate program. The Health Department has a harm reduction box, which includes a variety of items that can help people, including Narcan. The sites serve communities by providing free and confidential access to Narcan nasal sprays, which reduce overdoses caused by opioids. According to the California Department of Public Health, Narcan, the FDA-approved nasal spray form of naloxone, is an essential tool in responding to the opioid crisis. Narcan does not require medical training to administer and has no harmful effects if given to someone who is not experienced in overdose. Narcan distribution programs have been shown to decrease opioid-related overdose fatalities nationwide. The medication was recently approved for over-the-counter sales by the FDA earlier this year. ROSC began to partner with the Our House in Charleston in January to provide DOPP sites across 8 counties, including Coles, Clark, Cumberland, Douglas, Edgar, Effingham, Moultrie, and Shelby counties. Our House Recovery Oriented System of Care, ROSC, coordinators and recovery navigators will train, supply, and support Narcan distribution sites throughout the 8-county region. Expanding access to this harm reduction tool, the program aspires to prevent opioid-related overdose deaths in these communities. Additionally, Our House ROSC Council team members will provide Narcan and Narcan training to anyone who requests it by calling 217-348-8108. To access Narcan, stop by any one of the community distribution sites or call the number to obtain kits or educational resources free of charge. Jackie Wells, director of the Camargo District Library, said, "I feel the library services are changing radically. We are still here with books and movies, but we're trying to be more of a social hub. I guess that we're trying to make things available." Wells said she personally has known friends and people in her family who have struggled with addiction and believes the program is great for the community. The Narcan provided at each site was found in discrete locations alongside extra informational pamphlets. The goal is to have more education for people and lessen the stigma. We don't want people to feel bad coming in to get it. If you need it, you need it, said Wells. Marsha Bergener, library director at the Atwood Hammond Library District, said, "We feel there is a need in the community to have that available. There have been drug-related deaths. There are probably parents or spouses that might know someone living in their house that might have a drug addiction, and they want to have it on hand in their home if they have the misfortune of finding someone who is non-responsive," said Bergener. The Atwood Hammond Library is also working together with Kirby Medical Center to provide classes regarding mental health. Bergener said they are also working together with Moultrie Douglas Schools to provide help with mental health in classrooms. "Anyone that needs any kind of help, we're here to offer them programs, information, anything that can help anyone struggling with addiction or other mental health programs," said Bergener. Terry Hawes, pastor of the Tuscola United Methodist Church, said, "Every single person has the potential to save a life when they have Narcan," said Hawes. The goal for Hawes is to prevent as many deaths and overdoses as possible. Parish nurse Chelsea Evans also teaches classes on how to administer Narcan. Haas said Evans is very good at explaining how the medication safely helps people. Douglas County Recovery Navigator Darlene Smith also offers education for recovery in an upcoming program in Camargo on June 21st at 11 a.m. at the Camargo District Library. She talks about pathways to recovery with discussion about medication-assisted treatments, the 12-step programs, and more. She can be reached at 217-549-7481 for more information. The DOPP program is funded in whole or in part by the Illinois Department of Human Services, Department of Substance Use Prevention and Recovery. And there's another article in the military series, Remembering Richard Carson. Talk to anyone who knew Richard Carson, they will tell you that he was a nice young man. It's not that they don't know what else to say. They have plenty of things to tell. It's just that being a good guy was such an integral component of Richard's personality, an ingrained part of his character. Richard Carson was an all-American small-town boy who loved the outdoors. He loved fishing and hunting, sports and music. He loved his family and his friends, and he loved a girl named Joyce. He was a nice kid, very well-mannered, said his younger brother, Bob Carson. He knew what was right and what was wrong, and he would stand up for what was right. Richard Ray Carson was a Christmas baby. He was born to Bobby R. Carson and Louise Carson, née Price, on December 25, 1950. His mother was born in 1921 to Raymond and Fanny Price and raised in Alcany in Shelby County. His father was born in 1927 to James and Alcee Carson, who raised in Prairie Town Township in Christian County near Moquegua. Around 1940, Louise began teaching elementary school in Moquegua. In June 1945, at the tail end of World War II, Bobby was drafted into the U.S. Army Air Corps. Following his discharge on December 1946, he returned home and began to work in the grocery business in Moquegua. He and Louise were soon married and started a family. They had four boys, Michael, Richard, Robert, and Martin. About 1957, the family moved to Arcola, where Bobby Carson began working at Buy Right Grocery Store. He purchased the store in 1967. Louise began teaching elementary school in Tuscola, and the Carson boys began attending school in Arcola. Richard was a quiet boy and a good student. Good grades came easily to him. At Arcola High School, he played on the football team and served on the student council. Richard was a hard worker, and he and his brother Bob worked in their father's grocery store, and he had a wide circle of friends. He was one of those kids who used to show up at our house and play pool in the family room, said Doris Cheney, whose son Mike was Richard's classmate. Well, I just put food out for them. He was just like all the rest of our boys. He was really kind, polite, very smart. His brothers were all very smart. He was just a good kid. He wasn't one who ever got in trouble. He was very respected by his teachers, and he didn't complain about anybody. He was just a sweet kid. At the time, the Carsons lived in their first house just south of the railroad tracks on the east side of North Locust Street in Arcola, just south of the Arco Acres subdivision where the Cheneys lived. And he was so close to the Acres, so he was down there playing with the Acres kids. He grew up with the Acres kids, Cheney said. Like all kids, his brother Bob and Richard could have had an ornery streak that might have occasionally done something just as a way of testing things, but he never did anything mean or terrible. He said Richard would always look out for the younger brother and give him brotherly advice and always tried to steer him in the right direction. Bob said his brother was very loyal and a great love of his family and tried to take care of everything he could for them, and he recalled how much he and Richard and their brothers would help their mother, whom they affectionately called Big Lou, grade papers. When Richard was 16 years old, mutual friends introduced him to a young girl from Tuscola named Joyce Grimm, now Joyce Amaker. I met him in high school, said Joyce Carson Amaker. I went to Tuscola and he went to Arcola. We met when we were 16, and that's all she wrote. He was a really swell person. He was my first love. There was nothing I didn't love about him, so there's going to be bias there. He was like a big old teddy bear. Richard graduated Arcola High School with the class of 1968 and began working at DeKalb Agricultural Association in Tuscola, which was managed by Joyce's father, Delbert Grimm, and where he had met and became good friends with Bill Engelhart. We would kid one another about sports, said Arcola-Tuscola rivalry and all that stuff, said Engelhart. We had those kinds of things between us. We worked together and we wrestled around together and we laughed. God, how did we laugh? I mean, he was an easygoing guy, just a good time Charlie, you know? Bill remembers that his friend Dick, as many of Richard's friends called him, loved to smoke a pipe with rum and maple tobacco, and they would sometimes tease Richard about dating the boss's daughter, but it was all in fun. I worked side by side with him when it was hot. We sweated together when it was worked with him in the freezing cold. Those warehouses were so cold, but I remember that laugh. It happened a long time ago, but at the same time you reflect, and sometimes it's just as clear as day. You can think of someone and hear them talking or laughing or something else. That's the way I remember him. When we worked like dogs, sometimes down at the DeKalb seed store, but we didn't complain, he didn't moan, he laughed. He was a really good kid. On August 28, 1969, Joyce Grimm and Richard Carson were married in Tuscola and set up a house in a small upstairs apartment in Tuscola. Joyce laughingly remembers the apartment being so small that if you had the kitchen table folded out, you couldn't open the front door. It would have been ideal for the life of a young couple, but there was a war raging in Vietnam and far-reaching consequences which soon cast a pall. The first Vietnam War Selective Service Lottery, broadcast live on December 1, 1969, determined who and who would not be drafted. Based on his birthday, Richard's number was 84. We got married in August at Amaker. I remember, oh God, it was such a horrid time. We knew he was going to be, you know, his number was very, very low, so we knew he was going to be called, and he would get that letter. And it was like every night we'd come in from work to see if the letter was there to say he was to report for induction, and then he did get the letter. Richard was inducted into the U.S. Army on April 16, 1970, and received basic training at Fort Polk, Louisiana. He celebrated his first wedding anniversary while in training. Joyce and a friend, whose husband was training with Richard, drove to Louisiana to surprise their husbands one weekend. When he graduated from basic training, Joyce and his mother and his brothers were there to see him. Richard had a short leave spent at home, and then on September 21, 1970, he deployed to Vietnam. We didn't have much time together, said Amaker. We didn't even have a year together. Richard was assigned to the 2nd Platoon Company C, 1st Battalion, 46th Infantry, 23rd Division, American Divisionary, USARV. Richard was serving as an infantry team leader, tried to shield his wife from the reality of life in Vietnam, and in his letters home, he never let her know he was in combat duty because he didn't want her to be upset, but he shared the reality to his letters home to his mother. In late March of 1971, Carson was part of a contingent of 231 soldiers. It was a disastrous surprise attack. It was disastrous for the Americans, who suffered 30 killed, including Richard Carson, 82 others wounded. And that's really all the time we have for this week. This is Chris Yerkes saying I'll see you again next week.